Good morning and welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 15th parak of Melachim Beis. Two notes that I want to just put out there for those who are up to this point. Number one is that today and the parakim we've done up till now and the ones that I'll be following are pretty depressing. And sometimes you wonder to yourself, are we so proud of this history? Is this something we're so happy with? It feels kind of uncomfortable reading some of these things about what our ancestors did. So I completely validate that question. It's come up a number of times from a number of people I've had in conversations privately, and I want to dedicate a special session to that. It'll be separate to what we're doing on the regular daily basis. So hold that question. It's a very valid question, but nonetheless, we're going to charge for it. Another thing is that I know the king's names have been very complicated. I am building the timeline. Everybody's welcome to join in the collaborative timeline on nachnuk.com to make this, to pull this together, because it is a little confusing, similar names and a lot of changes. Especially in this perek, there are going to be a lot of changes. Let's now start the perek. The general framework of this perek, of perek of Tesvav, is that the first and last section talk about a king of Yehuda in the south, and the middle talks about a number of rebellions in the north. Okay, so that's the general overview of the parak, and it's going to this parak really underscores the falling apart, the devolution of the northern kingdom. So let's start. It starts off talking about the first king, whose name is Azariah. Azariah is the son of Amatziah. Remember, Amatziah was a good king, but his conquest of Edom went to his head. He started serving Avodah Zarah. He brought back the Edomite Avodah Zarah, and he was assassinated. Went into exile and was assassinated. So his son, whose name is Azariah, takes the throne, and he's a good king. Tanakh tells us that he did the Ayashar, but he didn't remove the Bamos. He didn't remove the personal altars. But there wasn't Avodah Zarah going on in his times. However, strangely enough, in the shortened account that we have over here in Melachim, we're told that Hashem gave him a plague. He had psoriasis from a certain point into his kingship till the end of his life, a very long kingship that he had. He started off at 16 and he ruled for 52 years. But nonetheless, he had this tzaras and he lived in a bais chavshes. He lived in a free house until his death, where during his lifetime, his son Yotam was in charge of actually ruling the country. What actually happened to him? So let's just deal with each little piece by itself. Rashi points out, based on the Pesukim in Divrei Hayamim Beis Perek Chav Vav, that what happened was that he conquered a number of territories back for the land of Yehuda. And in doing so, also, like his father, became very arrogant about it and decided that he wanted to go and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaMikdash himself. That's not his role. That's the role of the Kohanim. He goes inside, takes the Ketores. Upon entering, he gets Tzaraas, and he had that for the rest of his life. He, in a certain sense, his sense of self was too expanded. That was not his role. That was not his job. And he took it upon himself to do such a thing. And so his son actually had to take the reins. What was Beis HaChofshes? What does it mean that he was in a free house? Most simply put, that means to say that he was no longer in the position as ruler. He did not make decisions, which was a certain freedom for him. On another level, the Mephoreshim point out, the Chida points out, based on Chazal, that his house was set up in the Beis HaKfaros, in the cemetery, which was on the outskirts of town, because of course the Metzora cannot enter town, and he spent a very alone the rest of his life, for the rest of his kingship, which is a very sad ending. Okay, now we skip north. So as we know, in the north, we're now up down to the fourth generation of Yehu. Yehu had a prophecy that he'd only have four sets of kings after him, which is actually pretty long considering the northern kingdom. And so it is. Zechariahu is the son of Yerovam. Zechariahu is takes the rule, and after 6 months of not doing a very good job, there's a rebellion, and he is publicly killed by a person called Shalom ben Yavesh. Who takes his throne. This ends the dynasty of Yehu, and the Tanakh points out clearly this is a fulfillment of the prophecy that Elisha gave to Yehu, that you only have four generations. The Chidak tries to figure in, how does free will work into this whole business? Was it predetermined that all his children would be absolutely terrible and bad and end at this terrible dead end? And the Chidak points out, no, there were options as to how it could end, how it could change, the possibilities of how long everybody could rule for. That was open, but unfortunately they sort of settled into their fate, and this became the end. He didn't even have 6 months, and he was killed, and that was sort of like, the tail end of the Yehu option. Just to be clear about what's happened up till now, we've seen in the north a few dynasties. We've seen Yerovam in his dynasty, Baasha in his dynasty, Omri in the Achav dynasty, and Yehu in his dynasty. We've seen four real dynasties, and none of them have really lasted too long. And now we're going to enter into a time where there's very little dynasty. There's going to be rebellion after rebellion. So here we go. So as we know, those who live by the sword certainly do not die peacefully. And although Shalom takes the reins, 1 month later he is killed by Menachem Ben Gadi from Tirza, who takes his place. Menachem Ben Gadi is a proficient soldier, and he actually makes an inroad into conquering a city in Aram. Their enemies are on the northeast, and that's at a city called Tifsach. And the Tanakh makes it clear that Lo Posach Vayach. That he killed everybody there, meaning he didn't even leave a place for refugees to go. The Malbim points out this was cruelty not known to Israel and not known to even the Geneva Conventions of the time. It was a pretty terrible conquest that he has. He was obviously a very strong warrior, did not give any space for any civilians either. Menachem Ben Gadi takes the rule, and he actually does have a few years. He has 10 years in rule, but he doesn't do good things. He's like Yeravam ben Nevat, doesn't do a lot of good things. And already now we see the encroaching of the north. What happens is Pul, who is the king of Ashur, the new rising power in the north. This is the Assyrian area. Some of the Mepharshim attributed him to be Sancheirev. But nonetheless, this figure, Pul, comes in and has to be bribed away through a tax of silver, a huge amount of silver, from the northern population to push him away, and he is appeased and he retreats to his borders. But this is going to be now the encroaching of the foreign enemies. The north is now wavering. There is a little bit of continuity here in the sense that when Menachem passes away, his son does take his throne, which is Pekachia. Pekachia ben Menachem takes the role role of king in Shomron, but he as well also does not do good things, and he is rebelled against by Pekach ben Remaliahu. So again, Pekachia, the son of Menachem, is being killed by Pekach ben Remaliahu, who was one of his servants, and he killed him using the bodyguards that he had, Argov and Aryeh, and he had 50 soldiers of Gilad to perform this coup, killing him and taking his seat. And Pekach ben Remaliahu at this point in time goes on, and also doesn't do good, does the sins of Yeravam, as Tanakh points out. And at this point in time, a new power comes in. And that's Tiglath-Pileser from Ashur, who's the king of Ashur, the general from Ashur. And he conquers a whole swath of cities on the east. The Mepharshim point out that this is all East Bank Jordan. This is the fall of eastern Israel. You know, in the area where Jordan, the country Jordan is today, that area was all Gilad, Reuven, Gad, and Chatzis Shev Benashe. That falls now. This is the first step of exile, which falls to Tiglath-Pileser of Ashur. At this point in time, obviously under the leadership is seen to be weak, and there is another rebellion, and Pekach ben Remaliahu himself is killed by Hoshea ben Elah. So really, again, this is a very terrible, terrible time that we're witnessing over here. And now, finally, the Tanakh flips back to the south, and that is that Yotam, who is the son of Azariah, remember he was acting as the acting ruler while his father had Taras. When his father dies, he now takes the throne, and he does good things. He does good things. His mother's name was Yerusha, Bas Tzadok, and he does good, the Yashar B'nei Hashem. He didn't remove the bomos, the personal altars, but he started rebuilding areas, and he started rebuilding the base Shar, or the gate between the base of Migdash and the king's palace. He did a lot of really good things. However, nonetheless, now the writing is on the wall, and it seems that there's encroachment from Ritzin, the king of Aran, who's now starting to encroach on the east bank, and Pekach ben Ramal Eliyahu, we'll see the northern king of Israel starts attacking Yotam himself, which is a sad detail. We're going to see that's going to be following towards the end of his years, or maybe even the rabbi points out at the next step or the next generation. One just overall pattern to notice in our parak, which is worthwhile noting, and this is made note by Yigal Ariel in his Sefer Mikdash Melech on Sefer Melachim, really a beautiful, beautiful idea, and that is the following. He points out that there are different, in the northern kingdom of Israel, there are really two foundational sins. If you go into Israel proper, the area of Shomron, which is what the newspapers call West Bank today, the Shomron area, northern Israel, the sins that were there were sins of hedonism, of, you know, indulgence, and those led to Avodah Zorah, as the Gemara in Sanhedrin points out, that people did Avodah Zorah in order to create a philosophical system into which they could live the life they wanted, the pleasures they wanted, and that was Shomron, and he brings various proofs as to why Shomron is reflective of that. But then on the Transjordan, we have the area of Gilad, which is the area of Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Menashe. That wasn't so much about, you know, indulgence. That was more the villagers. That was the outskirts of Israel. There, the issue that they were contending with was actually a lack of concern for human life. And we see this in a number of ways. You know, the ratio of Ari Miklat in Transjordan on the East Bank was far higher than it was on the West Bank. So there were three Ari Miklat in Gilad area, and there were three for the rest of the 9.5 tribes on the west. Which means to say, as the Gemara points out in Makos, that Nefishe Roitzchim Begilad, there were many murderers in Gilad. There's a little bit less of a concern for life in Gilad, which also led to Avodah Zorah, but for a different reason. Not to permit a permissive lifestyle, but rather to live with this kind of, you know, disregard for human life. And of course, they are border cities, so they always are having to kill or defend themselves and be killed. It is interesting to note that there might be actually a power play which we're witnessing in this last parak, and that is that a lot of the murders, a lot of the rebellions are taking place from people who come from Gilad, interestingly enough. Shalom ben Yavesh is the first person who kills Zachariah of the dynasty of Yehu. Again, Yavesh is the area of Yavesh Gilad, so it's possible that he came from Gilad. Menachem ben Gadi again is from the tribe of Gad, which could possibly mean that he's also coming from the east. Pekach, who kills Menachem's son, Pekachia, has 50 warriors of Gilad with him. We don't know so much about Hosheb and Ela, but nonetheless, it's interesting that there might be actually a vying for power as to who is in control over here. Which side of the domain of the Jordan is in control? Is it you know, the metropolis of Shomron and its indulgent and city center, or is it the villages of the east of Gilad? It is interesting to note that Tanakh closes this section by saying that the exile of the east was first. That means to say that the Gilad bastion of the north fell first, and it is interesting to note, because this falls into the pattern of what Chazal says, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes protects us, even if we're doing terrible things, if we're together. The moment that we have disregard for one another, that's when we start falling, and the Gilad was the first to fall in this particular instance. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.